Hello and welcome to the Secular Buddhism Podcast, a podcast that presents Buddhist teachings, concepts, and ideas from a secular perspective. You don't need to use what you learn from Buddhism to be a Buddhist. You can use what you learn to simply be a better whatever you already are. I am your host, Noah Rochetta, and let's jump into today's topic. Today's podcast episode is going to be a little different from the normal format, because I do want to give you an update on things that have been going on in my life. The last podcast episode that I uploaded was January 25th. So it's been 3 months, more or less, since my last episode. And a lot has been going on. The truth is I've been quite busy, probably some of the busiest months of my life. I don't remember if I mentioned it in the last podcast episode, but in December, I started exploring and looking for a new job. So what happened is in November, actually, many of you know, I've been teaching powered paragliding and doing these lessons. It's a 10-day course that people can sign up for and they learn to fly. And in the winter months, I have to go down to Arizona. It's too cold to do it up here in Utah. So I've been traveling. I've been on the road a lot when I work. And my schedule, you know, I usually have to arrive a day early to get things set up. And then the day that the course ends, I drive home. It's at least a full day of driving to get there, because it's 12 to 13 hours with my trailer. So sometimes I'm gone for 12 or 13 days at a time, and then I'll come home, be home for a few weeks, and then go back and do it all over again. And while I've been doing this for years and making it work, my kids are now at an age where it's not as easy as it was before, because I'm missing out on their activities. They all have their own sports and activities that they do. My son plays cello, my daughters dance, my son's also on the swim team, my youngest plays soccer. So you get the idea, there's a lot going on. My wife's schedule as a teacher means that she's also busy, and it's her first year as the bilingual teacher in the dual immersion program. So she has a lot of work that needs to go into her curriculum planning and lesson planning. So long story short, it's a really busy phase of life, and me being gone that long is difficult. It's difficult on family, and it's difficult on me emotionally. So fast forward again to what I was explaining. In November, I came home after one of my courses. November was a particularly difficult month because I had also gone to Nepal. So I was gone for almost all of November. I came home and the family had decorated the pumpkins, and they were all out there on the stairs leading up to the door of the house, and there wasn't one for me. And that made me sad to realize I missed out on the whole pumpkin carving thing. Then the next course that I went to teach in Arizona, by the time I came home for that one, I realized I had missed out on the gingerbread houses that we do in December. And that was kind of the final straw. I had already been feeling like I was missing out on too much. And it really broke my heart to see the gingerbread houses with everyone's names on them. And there wasn't one for me. There wasn't one that said Daddy. There's one that said Mommy, Raiko, Noel, Gigi, and that was it. And I thought, you know, I can't really do this anymore. I'm no longer at that stage of life where I'm okay with being gone that long. So that's when I started the hunt for a new job. I thought what I would like to do is find something that I still enjoy, but that doesn't require me to be on the road so long. So it was a personal decision, and it was a difficult one because I love teaching. I don't know that there's something more fun than having a job doing your hobby, the thing that you love to do. But the price I had to pay for that, like I said, is being gone. So I started searching for jobs. I interviewed. I found a local one that was 20 minutes from where I live, and advanced through 3 or 4 rounds of interviews. And it was a long process. And then by the very end, I realized I didn't get the job. It was a very informal email letting me know that I didn't get it. And that was actually quite difficult to go through that ordeal because it had been like at least a 1 month process. So I started hunting again and found the job that I did end up getting, which is the new job that I have. And it's a remote job, so it still gives me the flexibility to be able to travel and do things with my family's schedule. But it gives me the stability as well of having a job and being able to provide without being on the road. So all of that said, I've gone through some significant changes in the last few months. The career change, relocating the work that I do. I used to travel to Arizona and I have a lot of gear. So there's a lot of moving pieces that needed to be reorganized. All of the paramotors and the wings that I have, putting them in storage units, and just reformatting how I'm going to do work. Once I started the new job, then you have the whole initial phase of like relearning an entirely new career, an entirely new industry for me. So I'm the director of marketing now for a company called Data Canopy, and they are a data infrastructure provider, so cloud and colocation, which for me was, it's like I kind of knew what it was, but didn't really. And now I do. I've immersed myself and continue to immerse myself in this new industry, trying to learn all of the ins and outs. But it's essentially the backbone or the infrastructure that runs technology. When you access a website, when you're listening to audio like you are now, whether it's through a podcast, all of this technology runs somewhere on hardware. And that hardware is probably a data center, a computer somewhere in a data center. And there's a lot that goes into maintaining that infrastructure. And that's the company that I work for now. That's what we do. We provide the infrastructure for businesses, for industries, healthcare, and so the hardware or the infrastructure, that's kind of the realm that I'm in now, and I'm learning a lot about it. And I actually want to tie that into the topic that I have in mind for the podcast today, because it's been very eye-opening for me and quite fascinating, to be honest, to learn the intricacies of the deep layers of what's running the the infrastructure that's running the technology that runs our day-to-day lives. I've always been familiar with the more superficial layer, the technology, the software, what allows us to do things like posting video or posting audio, and the software that renders that into a format that allows you to stream it, stuff like that. But I had never spent time going a deeper layer to understand the hardware that allows all that to happen. And it's been really fascinating. And I wanted to correlate it with two of the lessons that I talk about in the course that I launched last year, the Inner Peace Roadmap. In the very first lesson, I talk about this notion or the idea of the cognitive cycle. And this is for me to understand the correlation of how my beliefs, my thoughts, my emotions, my actions, and the consequences of those actions are all interconnected. And the way I present this in the lesson, in the ongoing cognitive cycle, we have beliefs that affect perceptions. And those perceptions influence thoughts. The thoughts give rise to emotions, and those emotions produce feelings, and those feelings influence the decisions that we make, and the decisions that we make drive our actions that produce behaviors, and the behaviors have consequences and results, and the consequences of those behaviors produce experiences, and the experiences that we have in turn shape our beliefs. And that's how the cycle goes round and round. And I'll give you an example to illustrate this idea. So a real life example, imagine someone who has the belief that they're not good at public speaking. I believe I'm bad at that. Well, that belief has probably been shaped by past experiences. I stuttered last time I gave a speech, or I was really nervous and forgot what I was going to say. So that experience helped shape the belief that I'm not good at public speaking. So now going forward in the cognitive cycle, I have the belief that I'm not good at it, which will now create the perception that public speaking is a terrifying thing. I don't want to do that. My perception of public speaking is that it's a negative experience. It's not fun. It's not pleasant. So next time I'm asked to give a presentation at work, this might trigger a series of negative thoughts. So now you have the correlation of thoughts. The thoughts arise because of the perception that arises because of the belief. And the thought might be, I'm going to mess up, or people are going to laugh at me. And because these thoughts are now in the mind, then those thoughts evoke emotions. And the emotion might be, I'm experiencing anxiety or fear. And the emotions give rise to feelings. The feeling is so think of the feeling as how we think about the emotion. So in this case, if the emotion is fear, I'm afraid to give my public speaking or to present to the public. The feeling that I have is I don't like feeling afraid. So now I have an unpleasant feeling around the fear that I'm experiencing at the thought of having to give a public address. So in response to the unpleasant feelings, then I might decide, you know what, I'm going to avoid this situation entirely. I'm either going to see if I can delegate this to someone else. And this is where action comes in. So now I'm taking actions, the action of either avoiding or asking someone else to do it, or maybe lying and saying, hey, I'm feeling sick. I'm not going to be able to present that today. Someone else should do it. And then this is where consequences come in. The consequences of my actions, it might be that I missed out on the opportunity to give a good presentation that would have impressed my boss or could have advanced my career. And the consequence of that action also can reaffirm the initial belief. Because now that I passed up on the opportunity, I think, oh, I feel way better now that I don't have to do it. And I have now reinforced the belief that I'm just not good at public speaking. And there you have the completion of the cycle. So you can see how all of these things influence each other. Again, it's beliefs that affect perceptions, that influence thoughts, that give rise to emotions, that produce feelings, that influence decisions, that drive actions, that produce behaviors, and those behaviors have consequences and results that produce experiences, and the experiences shape our beliefs. So that's the cognitive cycle there in a nutshell. And I think what's important to recognize here is that this is a constant thing. It's an ongoing process. It's always running in the background of everything that we say and think and do. So in order to cultivate greater inner peace, we need to understand the nature of the mind and the interdependent nature of these cognitive processes that are continually taking place within it. So starting with that first one, beliefs, in a separate lesson that I give in this workshop or in this online course, I talk about beliefs being somewhat like the software of the mind. And here you kind of have like the brain represents the hardware, and the beliefs that you have or thoughts or opinions, depends how you want to word that, represent the software. And I really like this correlation because understanding how our beliefs shape our perceptions and how that guides our actions, it really reinforces the importance of shedding light on our beliefs. It's like, I want to be introspective and recognize what is it that I believe. Just a quick example here. If I believe, let's say, a dumb example, but let's say I believe in ghosts. Then when I'm taking the trash outside and it's dark and I suddenly feel scared and it felt like something was watching me, that feeling is directly correlated to the belief. If I didn't believe in ghosts, then I probably wouldn't have the thought arise that, hey, there's a ghost here behind me. And I think, again, it's a kind of a dumb example, but it highlights the correlation between beliefs and then all the other things that start to take place in the mind. So if we think of beliefs like software, then it becomes really important to examine our beliefs to ensure, are these beliefs beneficial? Are they skillful? And then we can connect that to the actions that that we take in our day-to-day lives. So this was kind of the realization that I had with my new job, where I started to recognize, wow, I've had a lot of experience with software and technology, but I don't really know this other layer of the infrastructure, the hardware, the actual servers. Like, what do they look like? Is there a certain name, model, a brand? I don't know anything about this. And I have gone headfirst deep into the new world of data infrastructure, because now that's part of my job. And specifically, how do you market that? Something that I've always tried to do, I do it here with the podcast, is you take a concept or an idea that's complicated or a little bit complex, as a lot of these Buddhist teachings are. How do you explain it in a way that's simple, or at least simplified, and easier to understand and easier to implement into your day-to-day life? That's what I'm doing now for this company with their data infrastructure, helping businesses understand why you would want to, you know, have a configuration that's this way instead of that other way. So just as we rarely think about the infrastructure behind our technology, because we don't need to. We just know that it works, but we don't need to know all those intricate details. I think that we also make that mistake sometimes with not examining the beliefs that are running in the background of our own minds. Why do I say what I say? Why do I think what I think and do what I do? Why did I react this way to this particular scenario? Why does it bother me when so-and-so says this or does that? So much of that in our day-to-day lives is driven by a belief, some kind of a belief. And these are usually easy to identify with shoulds. Beliefs often seem to take the shape of a should. It bothers me that someone says what they say because they shouldn't say that. Well, where did that belief come from? Why should they say or not say something? So you can examine the belief and then recognize, well, if I didn't believe that they should be this way or that way, then that maybe wouldn't bother me that they are this way or that way. So that's just a quick example of that. And I think it's important for us to be aware of and to maintain our mental software and to understand it. So in the real world of these interdependent connections between servers and software, hardware and software, you have updates. You know, software that hasn't been updated gets really slow, it's really bogged down, and it becomes ineffective. And I think our brains are the same way. If we retain the same beliefs that we had, let's just take as an example the beliefs you had as a five-year-old, and nothing changed, you view the world in the exact same way as a five-year-old, but now in the context of an adult that's trying to live in a much more complicated life with jobs and relationships, that wouldn't work very well. You need to, throughout our lives, we update our beliefs. It's like, I believe this, but now I believe that. And we take in more information from the world around us and the experiences that we have, and our beliefs adapt. Again, you can reframe the word beliefs and maybe insert ideas or opinions, and it'll make sense in the same way. It's just how we think about things can evolve and change. And it's the same way with hardware and software. If we never updated any of the software, anybody who has an old computer knows this, it just gets slow. And then you get a new computer and like, oh, it's all fast again. But it's not always just the computer itself. That's a big part of it. The hardware changes and evolves and gets better. But also the software is always changing and evolving. So I like to think about that in terms of the brain. The brain, as the hardware for us, it's also changing and evolving. What is it that changes it? Well, the amount of rest that we get, the food that we consume. Those are just two examples that play directly into this correlation of hardware and software. Physical servers in the real world that run software or run virtual environments, they have to be, they consume a certain amount of power, depending on what the desired outcome is of that particular server. It may consume a whole lot of power, or it may not need so much power. It may need to be cooled. Some servers are in cooled facilities that are maintained like with air conditioning, or it's like it's like in a refrigerator. It has to stay cold because the server runs really hot. And our brain is kind of the same way. I think our brain needs to consume power. Depends on what we eat. Some things are good for the brain, some things are not. What we consume in terms of, think of music or entertainment, also has a direct effect on the brain. But then there's like the cooling part. If the brain needs to be cooled because it's running hot, that's kind of like recognizing, hey, I need to take breaks and I need to practice meditation or try to be more mindful or get rest and a certain amount of sleep every night. So I just wanted to draw, my primary goal with this episode was to give you a life update, to kind of explain why you haven't seen a podcast episode come out in the last 2 or 3 months. But also, I just thought it was really interesting that I've transitioned into a career that has now made me think more deeply about this example of the mind as software and the brain as hardware, and the importance of understanding how our brain works, both in terms of software, but also in terms of hardware. What am I doing for the hardware to maintain the hardware and keep it in the best shape possible with what I consume, with how much rest I get? So I wanted to talk about that, give you that update. And I'm still busy for the next month or two. In addition to all of this, my wife and I and the kids were going to be relocating and moving to a different part of the same valley where we live, but to a new home. And just that process of moving, packing up one home and then getting installed in another home. As you know, if you've done it, there's a lot of work involved with that. To make matters worse, it's the busy season for dance. And my wife, who teaches, she's a school teacher, but she also runs a series of dance competitions. And our daughters are in dance as well. So every weekend from March through the end of May, there's a dance competition somewhere, either one that the girls are dancing in or one that my wife is running. And her dance competitions have grown to the point where she needs a second person running all of the hardware and software that's used in a dance competition for the judges to record their notes and to tally the scores and all of that. And you can guess who is that new second person running that? It's me. So maybe reflect a little bit on this analogy of the brain being like hardware, and the beliefs or ideas that the brain has are like the software, and see if you can notice this correlation in your day-to-day life of how the belief affects the perception, the thoughts, emotions, the feelings, the decisions, the actions, and the behaviors, the consequences and results of those things. And then look at the overall experience of all that and say, how does the experience in turn shape the belief? It'll either strengthen and reinforce it, or it could be the catalyst for changing it. And that's how the cycle goes on and on and on. See if you can notice it in your day-to-day lives. Thank you for joining me today on the Secular Buddhism Podcast. If today's insights resonated with you, then there's so much more in store. You can extend your journey exploring these concepts and ideas by joining our online community of podcast supporters. Together in our weekly video conferences, we dive deeper, share experiences, and discuss how to live these teachings in day-to-day life. Discover all this and more at secularbuddhism.com, from insightful articles, my books, online courses, and information on how you can become part of our thriving community. May you carry the wisdom from today's episode into your daily life. Thank you for listening. Until next time.